Good evening. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group. It's good to see you. I want to say I'm a member of the West Side Men's group.
Nice!
You know, I've got a lot of guys I know who are friends. I've got some guys I sponsor, member of that group. It's a great group. I just love the enthusiasm. I love the enthusiasm of this group. What the heck happened here? You guys grew. I guess you guys expected Jerry to be here. That's what happened. That's why we got so many people here, you know? And I missed you guys. I was up in Tallahassee, you know, appearing before the parole board. You know, they have no sense of humor. Oh, man. You got to... Oh, listen. Next to the parole board, you guys are easy. They're no fun at all, you know? But they let my guy out, so... Lock your doors. Lock the doors immediately. Check your alarm. No, he's a nice guy when he's sober. It'll all work out for him. But it's good to be here. And this is step 11 or whatever, you know. It's going to be something like that. It's here and there. We'll figure this thing out. In my usual state of non-preparedness, I'm just going to sort of talk a little bit about myself. And I haven't found this set of a drink since January 17, 1981. So if I manage to make it, God willing, and, you know, you never know about that. I could be drunk tonight in an hour. I know that. I believe that. I'm not planning anything, but I mean, so I got to be back next week. I don't know what I'm going to do about that, but got to stay sober till next week at least. But I guess I'll have about 30 years. And it's not a record. No, well, thank you. Boy, that was pathetic. The gal with one minute, you know, got a standing ovation. 30 years is got that puking, you know what I mean? Guys are retching in the back, you know. Hardly seems worth it, the drive up from Dade County, you know, for that shit, you know what I mean? But, and a recovered thumb-sucking pride baby, you know, and sure, you guys are laughing, you don't know what it's like, but talk a little bit about that, and not all of you guys, well, maybe most of you guys, I don't know, I mean, a lot of you guys have seen, is there anybody here who has not been through one of my step series? Nope. Oh, who has not? Okay, there you go, well, just a few, but most of you guys... You know, sort of like know where I'm coming from, so I don't have to, and I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to go through all that deal, you know, so you sort of know where I'm coming from and what my deal is, and for the guys who haven't been through my deal, it'll be like a surprise to them, you know, and it'll be, so you know where I'm coming from, you know where we're at, you know, where, and since you showed up again, you know, you're not too offended, or at least if you're offended, you're intrigued enough to show up, so we're going to talk about the 11th step, and you know how, you know, basically where I'm at. And, you know, this is all my opinion based upon my experience. You know, that old line I say, like my sponsor said when I first came in, when the man with experience meets the man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience, you know. And you can talk about your alcoholic theories and what you think and your opinions and all that horseshit, and that's great. You know, I've heard for years I've sponsored hundreds of people. You know, like three made it or something. I don't know. But, you know, well, really, statistically, and I don't know, statistics are all soft around here, and I don't know. I had some guy want me, I'll email anybody the paperwork, the documentation on the statistics that are available. You know, I'm happy to mail it to you, and I don't know if it's true or not. I'm just the statistics I go by, but the statistics say that one half of 1% stay sober for more than 20 years, which is about 1 in 200. And I don't know if that's true or not. I've been around here a long time, and, A's been around for, what, 70, 80 years, something like that? So, you know, and this is a pretty large group, and, you know, considering it's been around for 70, 80 years, you'd probably think there'd be about 30 or 40, you know, there'd be about 10 or 20 people here with 30 years, and a bunch of people here with 20 years, and, you know, and if you go to most groups, finding guys with 20 and 30 years are about as rare as, you know, hen's teeth, you know, and, you know, it's something happens. You know, I've sponsored them. I've seen them drink at 5 years, at 10 years, at 15 years, at 20 years, and possibly even besides the drinking deal, which we know is really but a symptom of disease because the disease centers in the mind, not the body. Possibly even besides the drinking disease is the overwhelming number of alcoholics that are not happy with their sobriety at 18, 20, 25. Sponsor a lot of guys who have sobriety in their 20s. 18, 19, you know, long-term, what you would call long-term sobriety, that are confused and not happy. You wouldn't know it because they know how to talk at AA meetings. They know, you know, they know the rap. They know what to say or what not to say. And, you know, and listen, around here, you could be a serial rapist. If you got 18 years, they hand in your medallion. You know what I mean? Again, I mean, that's basically, we do it like a driver's license. You could be psychotic if you're 16 years old. You got a driver's license, you know? You haven't had a drink in 18 years. Yeah, I killed 15 people and raped, you know, a frog, you know? Come on up, you know? I haven't had a drink, you know, that's the most important thing. So, you know, Bill Wilson, when he was 23 years sober, wrote a letter, and it became actually an article in the Grapevine called Emotional Sobriety, the Next Frontier, and it all about, he talked about how it was, in his mind, it was all about something called unhealthy dependencies. And I'm not going to go into all that because we talk a lot about it. It's on the tapes and everything like that about idolatry and about what we get hooked up on, money, women, men, things, relationships. They talk about it in step 7 all through the book. And of course, what it says ultimately in the book, in every single page, and ultimately in the 12 and 12, is true dependence, true independence from all that stuff is total dependence upon God. And that's why they wrote a book. We're going to talk about God because the bottom line is, it says, see to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. And it's and the truth of the matter is, in the big book today, and I just grabbed it as I came in, I couldn't find mine, and there's actually only one or two sections I want to talk about in the big book. I'm not going to go through the whole thing because it's really maybe only one line I want to talk about in the big book when I'm sort of focusing on the 11th step. And I want to tell a little bit about my life in terms of some 11th step stuff. Now, there's many different ways to talk about these steps. I can talk for hours about these steps, and, you know, and I have a lot of stuff to tell you in the third hour of this talk, which is going to be phenomenal. But in any event, you can't really cover everything, and I can't cover, you cover bits and pieces, and, you know, 90% of the time people don't hear everything, they hear one thing. You know, if you go to a meeting, I don't know about you, I go to a meeting and I walk away with like one thing. It may not even be the thing that was said, it might not just be a feeling that I have about the speaker or whatever it is. You know, that's a plus for me. And I know that, everybody's at different points of the spectrum. You know, I'm gonna have 30 years in January. I can't be like I was or talk like I was or think like I was when I had 30 days. I can't do it. You know what I mean? I've just got what I got right now. And you're only going to be able to take from me what you can receive from me. And you're gonna hear what you're gonna hear. And we've been through all that stuff. And so I want to share a little bit about something I've been thinking in terms of the 11th step. You know, I've presented the 11th step in many different ways. And I've talked about many different things about the 11th step. And of course, I think one of the things that I think all these steps are meant to been taken in order, even though we cherry pick and things like that. And each step pushes you forward and gets you ready for the next step. And the only thing that holds you back is your alcoholism, which basically says, no, don't go in that deal, you know, because all these things are, don't come naturally to us. They go away. They go against our natural way of thinking. I mean, we don't even understand our natural way of thinking, but it's the only way we think. That's why when we come in here, the reason we come in here and fight with our sponsors and we get pissed off and we get mad when people say things to us that we don't like, and the reason why we say things like, you don't understand, or I'm different, or, you know, it's an individual. The reason why we argue and why we balk at all these things, you know, is it's tough to give up old ideas, especially when you feel so comfortable with them, even when you're miserable. You know what I mean? I may be miserable, but I don't know I'm miserable because this is the way I felt all my life. This feels natural to me. And, you know, when somebody tries to, when you come in here, if we could do this program and the exercise, the spiritual exercise to go with this program and the mind-changing decisions that have to be made and how to base your life on a different basis, a basis of trusting and believing in God, if we could do this thing by ourselves and make it work, we wouldn't be in Alcoholics Anonymous. Who would be here? We'd be out there doing our deal. But we have to come here. So if you're going to come here and try to get that psychological change, that emotional change, that spiritual change, it says if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready. If we're going to get ready and we're going to start doing this thing, we're going to want that change, you're pretty much assured that you're probably going to run into people that are going to tell you shit that you don't want to hear. I mean, really, think about it for a second. If you come here psychotic and sick and crazy and you need help and you need to change, if all you hear is stuff that you know already and you want to hear and you want to do anyway, I mean, what the hell you need Alcoholics Anonymous for? Just go out there and be you. You know, I want to be me. You know, just sing the Frank Sinatra song, my wife's favorite song, Like to Have Almost Killed Me. You know, what was it? I Did It My Way. I Did It My Way. I was an abysmal failure. You know, my wife loves that song. I said, that song killed me. I love the song too. It killed me. You know, I can't do it my way. But I want to do it my way. And the chief characteristic of alcoholics is defiance. So I'm not going to talk about a lot of things. I just talk about the 11 steps. What I want to really share about is some stuff I was thinking about. I really like to talk about things like inspirational thinking, which is part of the 11 step. I'll read a little paragraph on that, which is a different type of thinking, a different way of thinking, a different way of living your life, a different way of feeling about your life and thinking about your life and perceiving things and things like that. And I want to also talk about the, and this is what I really like to talk about, and I'm not putting down people that talk about drunk logs or anything like that, but you know what I really like to talk about is the vision. I want to talk about where you're going to go with this thing. You know, when I first came in, you know, I just loved hearing about the booze and the junk and the drunk logs and all that sort of stuff, because that's what I identified with it. I didn't identify with all the other stuff. Okay, but the truth of the matter is, when things really started popping for me and going crazy for me, is when I would read things like, we've experienced much of heaven, we've been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed, which is just as much a part of the big book as the jaywalker. And if you don't know what the jaywalker is, that's only because you haven't read the big book. You know, but we've experienced much of heaven, and we've been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed, is just as much a part of the AA experience and the transformational experience as the jaywalker. And I'll tell you, when stuff really started happening for me is when I read, we've been experienced much of heaven, we've been rocking the fourth dimension of existence, which we had not even dreamed. And I said, man, I know what they're talking about. When I would read, you're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. And I said, I know what they're talking about. No matter how far down the scale you've gone, you're going to be able to see how you can help others. Your experience can help. I said, I know what they're talking about. You know, that feeling of uselessness, self-pity will vanish, will disappear. You know, that self-centeredness, selfishness and self-centeredness will leave you. Fear of people and of economic insecurity. I asked Ray O'Keefe one day, 15 years ago, I said, when will this economic insecurity leave me? He says, never. I said, what do you mean never? He says, never. You'll never be economically secure. I said, what do you mean? It says in the book. He says, it doesn't say that. I said, it says. It says economic insecurity. He says, no, it doesn't. It says the fear will leave you. He says, you'll be broke, but it won't bother you. Something to really look forward to, you know, I'll tell you that, you know, and isn't that exciting, you know? And, you know, and that kind of stuff, and when you start identifying with stuff, and you, what does it say? What does it say after all that stuff? You know what it says after all that stuff? We begin to see that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Which I think means, now you ready? I've analyzed this. You know, I'm a lawyer, I'm a wordsmith, I've analyzed this. I think when they say God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves, this is what I think this means. After almost 30 years of doing this, I think it means that we realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. I know this is tough on the agnostics. That's why they wrote a whole chapter where it says, you know, this sort of thinking has to be abandoned. But apparently there are guys for 20 years that doesn't think this sort of thing has to be abandoned. They think you can just hang on to it and say that you're doing the AA program. And God bless them. And the great thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is love and tolerance is our code. But if you want to get what you want to get and go where you got to go, you know, I prefer to follow the formula, even though I don't agree with it. What does that have to do with it? So I want to sort of like just sort of explain a little bit about some things that have happened to me and some things I've noticed. Now, here's the interesting deal as far as what I'm about to share with you, because it's sort of like about my experience. Now, of course, I'm not intentionally trying to lie to you or exaggerate. I'm telling you, I mean, for the amount of money I'm being paid for this, what's the point of doing that? You know, I'm going to try to tell you. Plus, if you lie and do all that sort of stuff, you got to, like, remember shit, you know? And I'm 61 years old. I don't remember anything, you know? And the great thing about telling the truth and being transparent and not being scared anymore of who and what people think about you and that kind of deal, which is a freedom, believe me, because dependency on others, codependency on others and wanting to belong and worrying about what they'll like me and not like me, it kept me broke for many years. I spent more money, charging more money on charge cards, spending money on that I couldn't afford, that I didn't have, on things I didn't need to buy cars and things like that to impress people I didn't like that I could possibly imagine. You know what I mean? Because I needed them to like me, or I wanted to belong to this thing, or I wanted to look this way, or that sort of stuff. And the great news, and sin it means, what am I going to say? How am I going to say it? Why did I say that? What do they think? All that sort of stuff that occupies your thought life is so screwed up when you come in here. And for many years after you come in here, it doesn't go like that. Yeah, it's just unbelievable. It's so hard to be free. when you got all that mess going on in your mind. So one of the great things about that new freedom and that new happiness and the transformation that God does in your life is you're able to talk fast. Because you don't have to run it through the filter. What is she going to think? What's that going to think? What if I say this? You don't have to be so guarded. You can be transparent, because the truth is, you know, when you be transparent, there are going to be a whole percentage of people that hate you, but at least they'll hate you. I had people hating me, and it wasn't even me. I was being somebody else. You know what I mean? I'd have to trap them. I'd have to run down and get them and say, you don't understand. You think it's me, but I don't really believe that. You know, I'm not really a racist. You know what I mean? I was just saying that to fit in. You know, or, you know, I love everybody. You know, I mean, whatever the heck it is, you know, and at least they hate me. But you know, the great thing is the people that like me, which is pretty good, because then all I have to do is be me. And I do me so well. I mean, I can't believe it. I've tried to do you. It takes effort. You got a membership. But me, it's real easy to do. And I actually do me better than I do anybody else. Apparently. But first, of course, I had to figure out who I was, which is another deal altogether, which probably has to do with another step. But in any event, so what happens is, you know, one of the problems is even though I live in the now and I'm here today and where I'm at, you know, you really don't know what's going on in your life, like right now, until you're 10 years down the road. I mean, I don't even know how to explain that, so I'll try to explain it anyway. And that's one of the funny things about AA and the spiritual program. Sometimes what's actually happening in your life and who you are and what you are is more transmitted by what you see than what you hear, because words cannot really because you can't put it in words. You know, you'll watch somebody, you'll see something, you'll watch the way they move, you watch what they are, you take the whole picture in, and you get a feeling, you get a something, and it's and the sum of the parts is bigger than the whole. It's like when I saw Al Kennedy when I was 3 months sober at an AA meeting. And, you know, I thought AA was all about drinking, that's why I came here, for not drinking. And this guy starts talking, and I'm looking at him. I'm just staring at him. You know, at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, which was a major book, according to Dr. Bob and the good old timers, that where AA started, that one of the essential books they read was Sermon on the Mount, which is in the books in the New Testament, Matthew, I think it's 5, 6, and 7. And at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, which is basically a sermon given by Jesus, at the very end, the last line, it says this. This is what it says. You know, Jesus was doing his step meeting that time. He was on a mountain. He says, there's a group like this. And this is what it says. And it says, the people were amazed because he spoke with authority, not like the scribes. In other words, what he was trying to say is that people were amazed because of the manner in which he spoke and how he spoke and how he presented himself was different than just like a teacher or a preacher or the rabbis or something like that. It was like he spoke it like he knew it. Like he knew the deal. You know what I mean? And he knew something. And you know, when you see somebody, and when the reason why the judges don't work and the lawyers don't work and the doctors don't work and the wives don't work and the husbands don't work, but some schmuck you've never seen before at an AA meeting gets up and starts talking and you're amazed because he speaks with authority, not like the scribes, because there's something about him, because he's authentic. And if there's anything alcoholics recognize, like this is horseshit. 1,000 miles away, because they are. You know what I mean? Because I you know, who better to recognize a bullshit artist than an unbelievable bullshit artist, you know? And so you recognize that thing, and it traps you and it gets you, because you recognize the real deal when you see it. And that's the thing that gets you. It's something that's genuine and authentic that you can hang on to, and you say, this is something. So when I saw Al Kennedy up there talking, and I didn't understand him at all, because he had like 30 years, and you know, and he's talking like I could never talk like him. I could never be like him. And I knew he was exactly like me, but he was exactly not like me. And I knew he was an alcoholic, but I knew I could never be like him. There was something about him, and then he gets off the podium, and I turned to my sponsor, and I said, that guy was amazing. I was amazed. I said, that guy was amazing. And he said to me, because he was kind, but he wasn't soft in a sense. But he was strong. And he was strong, but he wasn't arrogant. And he was helpful, and he was nice. There was something, and he had a sense about himself. Not like the alcoholics or the people I'm used to dealing with, who were pushy and chubby and you know, full of themselves. But there was something about him. Yeah, it was the kind of guy who says, man, I wish I could know that guy. I wish I could hang out with him. I wish I could drink coffee with him. I wish I could be with him, because he made me feel good just listening to him and stuff like that. And there was something about him. And he gets off, and I turn to my sponsor and says, that guy was amazing. My sponsor says, you know, he's dying. And I said, I'm talking about Al Kennedy, the guy who just spoke. He says, he's dying. No, the guy who was just up here. He says, Russell, he's dying of terminal cancer. He has 3 months to live. And I said, he didn't say anything about dying. I said, I know. He didn't even look like he was dying. He says, I know, I mean, you know, because I would have, you know, I would have told you, like, it's nice to be here, you know, I'm dying, but I got out of my deathbed, you know, just to get a medallion or something, you know. A little applause. Might have gotten better applause than that little 30-year deal. But, you know, and I would have gotten some use out. And he didn't even mention he was just trying to help people and everything like that. And, you know, my vision, you know, in the Old Testament says, when there is no vision, the people perish. When the people can't see where the vision is, they perish. And I was a man without vision, without a proper vision, you know, which is why I drank. I mean, I had the wrong vision. And to come here into AA and think it was just a not drinking club and realize that here's a guy and maybe, possibly, what if I could hang and be, you know, how do you get there when I'm a guy who, if I had a hangnail, if anything went wrong, I'm crying about it for a week and a half. And here's a guy who's dying, and it doesn't even seem to be bothering him. He's like, how do you get there? I don't even know how to get there. How does that happen? Did I want that? Of course I wanted that. I mean, the world scared me. Everything scared me, and I didn't even know it scared me. I wouldn't have admitted it was scared me, because one of the problems is what I realized now is I was looking back over my life, and I was sort of looking at, you know, what happens is when you read the big book 1,000 times, and you're out there sponsoring people, hundreds of people, and you're out there going to meetings and thousands of meetings and you're doing this stuff. It just gets you like become it. You like become it. You don't even know. One day you wake up and you are it. You know, you don't have to do the fourth step. You are the fourth step. You don't have to do the seventh step. You are the seventh step. You don't have to try to believe, have faith in God. You have faith in God. A faith that works. You don't have to, you're not experimenting with this. This isn't an experiment anymore. It's just you and it's your life and you're living it and you're involved and you're fully integrated in this deal. And what happens is I look back and I try to see where I was. And what I realized is that while I was going through stuff, I didn't even realize what I was going through. I didn't even understand what was going on. Maybe 5 or 10 years later, I look back and I say, man, that's what was going on. And, you know, and this thing takes a while. I mean, as I said, I'm not the guy who walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, in one sense, I am, because this is an incurable disease. And the fact of the matter is, I'll always be an alcoholic. And I would never say, you know, thank God I'm cured of this deal. I don't have this problem anymore, because you want some, I'll go home tonight and something will happen, some way, somehow, God will put in my space some deal, something will happen, and I'll act like I did when I had 5 minutes. And I'll say, well, I guess I haven't gotten rid of it completely. And everybody in here has done that deal. But everybody in here has experienced probably the miracle of inspirational thinking. You know that sort of thinking they talk about in the big book? Let me read the part in the 11th step where it says, in thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. Man, how do you do that when your whole life is struggling in hand-to-hand combat with the crap that's going on out there? We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Gradually, like over 30 years, becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, now listen, it says, nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on a plane of inspiration. We come to rely on it. What does that mean? And I want to try to express to you what that means in my life today. What you have to look forward to. And notwithstanding what I'm saying, this is what's fun in my life now. I understand that if God allows me to be sober and active in AA for another 10 years, in 10 years from now, I'll be looking back at where I am right now and I'll see it completely differently. Because I'll be at a different deal. Because this is a matter of growth, you know. And you know, how many people have experienced the deal when they're in AA? Because, you know, the drinking is but a symptom of the disease. We all know that men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, discontent, unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. You drink because you can't stand a life sober. Because sober is for shit. Because no matter what's going on, no matter how much money, no suit of clothes, the best, the new haircut, the new this, the new guy, the new gal, somehow in the end, it's all a bunch of bullshit. And I just need a drink. You know what it says in the big book? It says, well, the real problem is we're selfish and self-centered. And that is insulting. So I'd love to say everything I did bad, and every time I hurt people it was because of alcohol. Alcohol made me do it. I'm really a nice guy. But the truth of the matter is, most of the people I hurt in my life by my anger spurts and by my depressions and by my hanging up and by my treating me bad and by being irresponsible, making horrible decisions at horrible times and bad judgments, I get stone cold sober. And I've heard many of the same people in my life, many of the same ways after coming to Alcoholics Anonymous than before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the only thing alcohol allowed me to do was live my sorry self while I was hurting people and acting like a bum and irresponsible. So I don't talk about how alcohol made me do anything. You know, this is the only thing alcohol did was it was the cure for me for a while. And that's why we call it alcoholism. It's the only design of it. It's named after the cure. There's no suit of clothes, no amount of money, no woman, no car, no nothing. Ever worked quite as well as just a few drinks, and that's why I drank it. I'd still drink it today if it worked. Unfortunately for me, alcohol doesn't work for me. And the real unfortunate thing for my life is it stopped working about 10 years before I realized it. And you hurt a lot of people. But boy, I just find anybody to stop drinking, not have alcohol do for you what it did for me, and then stop drinking it. You're not gonna do that. I loved it, and I drank it for many years, and that's the deal. So I was looking back at my life and trying to figure out how this thing worked in my life. You know, and now, of course, I know that it was God working in my life, because I tried so hard, drunk, sober, in and out of AA, to change myself. You ever try to change yourself? Yeah, I'm not going to be scared. I'm not going to let that bother me. I'm not going to be worried. I'm not going to let that woman push my buttons. I'm not going to let that happen. I'm going to be different. I'm going to go on a diet. I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to change my job. I'm going to do... You ever try that deal? Of course you did. You're alcoholics. Let me guess. You failed! Yeah, of course you did. Because it didn't work. It worked for a little while, and then you failed. It worked for a little while, and then you failed. It never worked permanently. You know, it just... You worked hard at it. You knew it was going to work. You knew all you needed to do was come to Florida. Get a different job. You knew if you just got rid of that wife or that husband... You knew it was your boss's fault, you know what I mean? You knew all you needed was a new car, more money. You know, I mean, you knew it was so obvious to you. It's like written in your DNA. This is the problem. This is the problem. I got a program that says you cannot manage your own life. You're an alcoholic. You cannot manage your own life. How does that fit into a mind where I'm absolutely sure this has to do with managing my life? I mean, I know we read it all the time. You cannot manage your own life. Then we walk out the door and sit there saying, okay, all we do is spend the entire day thinking about how we're going to manage our lives. How am I going to stay out of trouble? How am I going to make this work? How am I going to change this? How am I going to get this? How am I going to get that? Going to meetings. So, you know, what did I do the first 5 years, 10 years I'm in an alcoholic? You know, my whole life, here's one thing I was clear about. Before and after coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was absolutely clear that, you know, I'd say, I know you think I have a drinking problem, but I don't have a drinking problem. Don't you understand? I drink because I have problems. As a matter of fact, my drinking perfectly matches my problems. And pretty soon, I mean, if you had the problems I had, you'd drink like me, and you can't possibly understand my problems because you can't possibly understand about my divorce, my wife, and this, then, you know, and I think if you understood every problem I had and the nuances of my life, my parents divorced, and all that sort of bullshit, you'd understand that I don't drink because I have a drinking problem. I drink because I have problems, and thank you very much for your advice. Why don't you go fuck yourself, you know, and that kind of thing. Excuse the F word, the F bomb, okay? So the bottom line is that's how you know you're not in church. So the bottom line is, that's why my pastor won't let me speak to the congregation. But because he never knows, you know? You know, that's the deal. I got my sponsor, he's a Baptist preacher, he's got 56 years, 55 years, you know? He'll talk to me about that on the way home. You know? Maybe not, because I repented of it. But in any event, you never know. But in any, so you see, but the thing is, one thing about an alcoholic is before even you come in here, the one thing that's absolutely clear, we know this. We know that our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. That's what it says. You remember when you first came in and you started reading that book, you said, man, that's me. Yeah. For your entire life, you knew nobody understood you, nobody understood, and you're reading this book, you say, man, that's me. That's me. That's me. And it says, to an alcoholic life seems the only normal one. It says, yeah, this seems like normal to me. Everything I did, no matter how outrageous, didn't seem outrageous to me. I had a reason for anything. I could tell myself rational lies. The lies made sense to me. Why I didn't pay the child support check? I had a reason for that. I intended to do that. I wanted to do that. But this, it was always somebody else's fault. Even was my fault. It wouldn't have happened that way if it wasn't for this. It was so clear to me that I was being screwed up and I was feeling bad because this was wrong and that was wrong. Or I didn't have this, or I didn't have that, or I needed this, or I needed that. If I had a girl, I'd be okay. If I only had a girl that really loved me and I loved her, I'd be okay. You know, if I had a car, I'd be okay. Because if I had a car, I could get that girl that would love me and be okay. If I had money, it'd be okay. Because if I had money, I could buy the car and I could get the girl and I'd be okay. Somehow the girl figured in there. You know what I mean? As a matter of fact, I couldn't get sober until I could get rid of the girl. Nothing against you girls. I mean, girls are nice. I like girls. You know what I mean? But I had to get rid of the girls. I had to stop drinking and stop with the girls. You know, because the girls to me are like bottles. As a matter of fact, I said to my sponsor once, I said, look at that blonde. He said, what did you used to drink? I said, I used to drink scotch. He said, that's a bottle of scotch with legs for you, Russell. You know? And it's true. It says in the big book. It says it lumps it on the material things. It says it lumps romance. You see, when alcoholics hear about relationships, it says, see to it that your relationship with God, with Him, is right in great events. When we talk about relationships with here, we're not talking about relationships. We have whole meetings on relationships, and the only relationship that's important here is your relationship with God. It says in 26 of the big book, it says, we all, what we talk about in an A talk is in our own words, in our own point of view, how we developed our relationship with God. It's all about our relationship with God. It's all about finding God, committing ourselves to God. You know, having a life on a new basis, the basis of trusting in God and doing His will and all that sort of stuff. And when we have these meetings on relationships, and everybody wants to talk about guys, gals, sex, and all that sort of stuff, because that's what important to you. Because you know that that's the one thing, if that could be fixed up in your life, then everything would be fine. And that's what I thought for many years. And the world tells me that. The billboards tell me that. The movies tell me that. TV tells me that. Everything in the outside world, outside this room, tells me that that's the way I should think. And as a matter of fact, if I don't think that way, I'm stupid. And I'm uncool and I'm crazy, and if anything, I want to be, that's another alcohol, I want to be accepted. And I don't want to be laughed about, because when you have low self-esteem and you feel like a piece of crap, the last thing you want to do is aim to laugh at you or say you're wrong. So the bottom line is that I don't even have a shot. Because this seems normal to me. And I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and my whole mind is racing a million miles per hour. How do I get these things? How do I have this thing? What do I lose this thing? And for the first 10 years, I'm sure maybe 15 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know it's a sliding scale. It wasn't as bad in the 10th year as it was in the 5th year, or it wasn't as bad in the 15th year as it was in the 3rd year. But and it happens in a sliding scale. It doesn't happen like that. But the bottom line is I know for at least the first 15 years I was whining, thumb-sucking, crybaby to a certain extent, because before coming to AA, I was worried about stuff and things and them and him and after coming, and I'll tell you something, the day after I stopped drinking, that's the way I thought the day before I started drinking. What's going to happen to me? What about the money? What about the girl? What about the car? What about the job? What about what they think about me? What about my house? What about, you know, what about the things, the stuff, the things I need? What about my weight? What about my clothes? What do they think about me? What's going to happen here? What's going to happen there? I'm mind going a million miles per hour trying to grab all that stuff and put it together in a nice little bow so that I'll be okay and not be hurt. You know, and that's the way I thought the day before coming to AA. And I came to AA and I stopped drinking. You want to know something? The day after I stopped drinking, I thought exactly the same way. I thought exactly the same way. So what do you think I talked about in AA meetings? It was a constant reportage of everything that happened to me that day. Everything that happened to me that week. You wouldn't believe what happened to me. You wouldn't believe about my boss. You wouldn't believe about my wife. You can't believe what happened to me on the way over here. I can't believe what happened in traffic. I can't believe about God, my boss, my car, my money, the IRS. You know, it was a constant reportage about the world and everything that's unfair and everything that's happened to me and all the blame and everything like that. And I was nuts, but not drinking. Picking up medallions, which is okay. Doing the stuff and, you know, doing all this stuff. And I realize this now, and I'm not saying my sobriety was bad. It was just sobriety. It's just 5 years, first 7 years, first 10 years of sobriety. And what I realize now when I go back and I look about, it's the way we think. Because our old way of thinking, how do we get a new perception through 1,000 forms of humiliations and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency? Through the pain and the agony and the suffering and all, as it says in the seventh step, as the suffering and going through all that and the trusting in God, even though you don't believe in it, and the faking it until you make it and following God's, and all of a sudden things start changing. And the truth is, as it's happening, you don't even realize it's happening. You're reporting and things are changing, but you don't even realize you're changing. And sometimes other people see it before you see it. And somewhere along the line, and I don't know where it was, I don't know whether it was after 5 years or 10 years or 15 years, I stopped whining and crying and complaining and blaming and comparing and worrying and doing all the stuff I used to do, and all of a sudden I found myself listening intently to guys at step meetings, to people at meetings, listening to them to see whether I could get anything out of what they said that would help me. Which is still a little self-centered, and there's nothing wrong with it, but at least I'm listening because I want to see from their experience what does this mean to me, and I'm trying to see how this could help me. I'm taking a little proactive control of my life and sort of like doing the God thing, and I'm working on this deal, and somehow I'm changing, I don't even know I'm changing, because along the way, my thinking, however I'm thinking, seems the only normal way of thinking to me. Doesn't seem any other way of thinking. And so all of a sudden, one day, I don't know when it happened, I don't know if it was 20 years or 25 years or 22 years or whatever it is, all of a sudden I found myself at an AA meeting, and I didn't even realize this was happening, but that's the way it is today. Listening to people because I was interested in what they had to say about themselves. Because I was interested in seeing how they were feeling, how they were feeling about themselves, what was going on in their lives, and if there was anything I could do to be helpful to them. I was no longer thinking about the guy who cut me off on the way over here. I was no longer thinking about what's going wrong with my life or what's going right with my life or how great I'm doing or how bad I'm doing or what if this or what was that or moving to Milwaukee or any of that stuff. I was no longer thinking about how can I fix this or how can I do this. What I was thinking about was somebody was sharing is how is she doing? What is she saying? Is there anything I can do to help her? And why shouldn't that be the net? And then you know something, you don't even realize as this is happening that your thinking is changing. It's just the way you think. You know, you don't even realize that all of a sudden, like the old timers in it, you're not wanting anymore, you're not crying, you're not blaming, you're not comparing, you're not worrying, all of a sudden life has become easy. And you walk through your life trying to talk to people and hook up with people and listen to people and speak to people and being concerned about what's going on with them. And you know, all of a sudden one day you wake up, maybe you have 25 years, maybe you have 30 years, I don't know what it is, you have some time, and all of a sudden you read the big book. You just open it up. You haven't read it in a few months, so you open it up and you start reading something in the big book. And all of a sudden you read something in the big book and you start identifying with it because it's happened in your life. And you read this. This is what you read on page 63. When we sincerely took such a position, the position of trusting in God, all sorts of remarkable things followed. Remarkable things for an alcoholic, for a thumb-sucking crybaby. We had a new employer, and being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept, he provided everything we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, if you're established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. You become less and less interested in yourself. You become less and less worried about yourself. All of a sudden, you're not reporting on you that you wouldn't believe what happened to me. You wouldn't believe what my wife did. You wouldn't believe what my boss did. You wouldn't believe what's going on in my life. All of a sudden, it's not talking. You're not even thinking that way. We became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter, we were reborn. And all of a sudden you read that and say, that's what happened to me. It's no longer words in the book. It says, that's exactly what's going on. I'm 30 years sober. That's where I'm at. This isn't like a theory to me. This is not like I'm saying, you know, if we work this thing, that may happen to you. I'm telling you, this is exactly what happened to me over 30 years. Perfectly, no. 100%, no. But pretty much this is the deal. Self-centeredness will fade away. You'll begin to see where you can help others. This is the kind of stuff that I'm talking about. And you come into meetings, and you got 3 months, you got 3 years, you got 5 years, or whatever it is. And something happened to you. Traumatic, untraumatic, crazy, uncrazy, scary, freaky, panicky. And you hit the ball out of the park. Your mother says something, the IRS says something, your boss says something, you know, the darts are coming at you, you're about to be killed, and all of a sudden you turn and you say the perfect thing. You don't even know where it came from. But all you know is, without even thinking, you say the perfect deal. And you think the perfect thing. So you run to your AA meeting. And you say, you wouldn't believe what happened. You say, my mother said this, my father said this, the IRS said this, the boss called up, they said I was fired, they said I was like, oh, they said this, they said that, they accused me of this, they accused me of that, and I just looked them in the eye and I said this. And it was like perfect. It was like perfect. Everything worked, it was like, and this is what you say. You say, you hear it at AA meetings all the time, you'll hear it, you say, you don't understand, that's not me. That's not me. Because you can't even take credit for it. Because what you're trying to say is something happened to me and it was freaky. It was like an out-of-body experience. You know what I mean? I said this. I did this. This happened. Is that for me? Because I was expecting a call from... Listen to me. It's okay. It happens to me all the time. Don't worry about it. As a matter of fact, what they don't know, what's your name?
Linda,
what they don't know is we planned that, didn't we? We got together on that deal. That was part of the deal, because I wanted to tell you, you see, that's an illustration of what I'm talking about. Just perfect, you know what I mean? Perfect. And you said, thank you very much, thank you. And you did that perfectly, right on cue. So you see, the deal is, it was just perfect. How did he do that? How does he do that? Yeah, I know, you're great. You know, and you say, so how does he do that? And you report to the group because you're like amazed, because to you it's an amazing thing. Because you acted totally out of character. Because at any other time you would have screamed, you would have yelled, you would have sucked your thumb, you would have drank, you would have complained, you would have blamed, you would have punched them in the face, you would have done something, you did something, you did like an Errol Flynn. You know, I mean, for some of you guys, you don't even know what that is. A Cary Grant. A Brad Pitt. A Tom Cruise, you know what I mean? You did a Tom Cruise, okay? A Juliet Roberts. You did it all of a sudden for 30 seconds, girls, you were Juliet Roberts. Like, perfect, you know what I mean? And whatever it is, you know, and whatever the deal is, and you gotta tell it to the group because you can't believe it. And you don't even take credit for it. You say, well, that's not me. I don't even know how it happened, everything like that. And you don't even know how to make it happen again. But you're just reporting because it happened, and you're pretty excited about it. Where did that come from? And you're always thinking suspiciously that something to do with going to AA meetings, but you're not quite sure. Anybody ever had that experience? No, I would like to have that experience. Like, well, that's like a once a week, maybe a once a month experience, right? How would you like to have that deal? Okay, once a week. Would once a week be okay? Okay, how about, listen, that wasn't planned, okay? Now, how would you like to have, that's okay, relax. Okay, now listen, how would you like to have it? How would you like to have that deal? Once a day. One time a day. One a day? Once a day? You know, you might blow up or something, you know. The group would start kicking us. Shut up, we don't want to hear it anymore, Doris, you know. Enough of this inspirational stuff, you know. But you know what it says? It says it becomes a working part of the mind. We come to rely upon it. How about once an hour? How would you like to live your life where that's happening once an hour? Where there's all of a sudden you're not thinking about something. Well, how about this? Anybody have a committee?
Yeah.
You know the committee? What would you do if the committee went away? You know what you would do it first? You know what you would do it first? I'm going to tell you from experience. You'd miss it. You'd go looking for it. Try to hunt it down. See where they could find it. See where it was hiding. You'd be worried. You know? Maybe they don't like you anymore. Oh, boy. You guys are really ill. Okay, so listen. Here's the deal. So how would you like to have that once an hour? How about once a minute? How would you like to live your... See, you know what it says? We've come to rely upon it. How would you like your entire life not to be based on what the committee's telling you, but on inspirational thinking? You know, you wouldn't be talking about it all the time at your groups. You know what I mean? You know why? You know why you wouldn't be talking about it? Because, like they say in the big book, it becomes the normal way of life for you. It's just the way you are. And you see things differently, and you act differently, and you're not worrying about stuff, and you're not up at 3 o'clock in the morning with many things racing through your mind, and things don't bother you that much, and all of a sudden it isn't. You don't get to an AA meeting all loaded up with the crap you ran into, and every experience you had on the way over here, and every telephone call you had, and every look somebody did or didn't give you, or every thought you had just penetrating your mind and driving you crazy, and you're not comparing your insides with other people's outsides and worrying about all that stuff, and all of a sudden life is just great, and all you're doing is sort of listening to other people and say, how can I help her? How can I help him? And you listen to every person like they have a broken heart, because they probably do. And you're just grateful to God because this stuff is happening. You know what it says in the big book? It says we come to see that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And if somebody asks you how this happened, you can't even claim credit for it. You don't even know how it happened or when it happened. But you know, somehow, you start off here and now you got 30 years and here you are. and all you did was listen to a bunch of people and follow directions and, you know, did what they say and follow the right people, and that's the deal. You know, and that's the deal. So God bless you.